And of course, after that, we'll deal with the minutes. Not unless there's any other issue. Let me allow an opportunity for some apologies, if we have any. Some apologies. Amanda?
Good morning, Chair. The only apology that I received is that of the Minister. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Any other apology besides that one that we have?
No, Chair, I have not received any apologies from the members of the committee.
Okay. The department is led by the DM. So I will take this opportunity to welcome the DM, the officials, and all of you. I'll afford the DM to make some remarks before the responsibility can be delegated to the relevant person that will be doing the presentation. DM?
Recording in progress.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. As I was about to log into this meeting, I just experienced load shedding here where I'm staying. So as a result, I'm using a very, very small gadget. I'm asking that I should not switch on my video. Chair, if you agree.
No, you're allowed, DM Mapulane. We understand. Even where I am, also for the same challenge, but for now, it's still fine. You are allowed to, as long as it's clear as it is now, we're fine.
Yeah, no, thank you very much, Chair. Chairperson, we are here to present the annual performance plan of the department. We have got the officials. The acting DG is on leave, and as a result, she's not going to be able to be with us this morning. The delegation from the officials will be led by DDG Mashalo, as we have arranged. So he is the one who's going to be taking us through the presentation, Chair. The presentation is quite straightforward. It's the APP of the department. So I'm not gonna get too much into it. I'm just gonna ask if you do allow that you should take us through the presentation, and if there are questions, we can then clarify the questions during the Q&A session. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Sholok?
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. Good morning, DM, and all the members and everybody that is listening on this platform today. I'm going to take you through the 2022-23 annual performance plan of DCDT. Stevens, if you can go to slide number 4, as we've discussed. Okay, in terms of our APP, so we do have 36 targets. And if we were to look on our impact statement, so the impact statement is digitally enabled, inclusive and competitive economy and society. So from that impact statement, we have derived 4 outcomes. Outcome 1 being enabling the digital transformation policies and strategies, as well as regulations, where we do have 13 APP targets for this financial year. And then outcome number 2, which is increased access to secure digital infrastructure and services. We have got 7 APP targets. Outcome number 3, it's digitally transformed economy and society. We have got 8 APP targets. And then the last outcome is high performing and sustainable portfolio to enable achievement of the respective mandates, where we do have eight APP targets. So in total, as I mentioned before, we do have 36 APP targets for this current financial year. You can go to the next slide. So in terms of the outcome number one, if I can just delve a bit onto the, the outcomes, the APP targets in there. So what we are looking to do for this financial year is to have three country positions developed and approved to support the national ICT priorities, focusing on BRICS, ITUPP22, as well as WTDC. We are also looking on to having the audiovisual white paper submitted to Cabinet for approval. The other one is the policy direction on the discontinuation of the analog TV sets from domestic production and imports. As you would know on this one that we are going ahead with the digital migration. So this target is supporting that digital migration to ensure that we move away from the analog transmission in terms of TV. The other one is the post-bank amendment bill monitored in parliamentary process. The other one is the draft regulatory reform policy that is going to be developed. SABC bill submitted to cabinet for approval to be introduced in parliament. Also, we do have the disestablishment of USASA that we are looking into. Digital economy strategy, which will be developed as well. SAPO amendment bill, which will be submitted to cabinet, also to be introduced to parliament in this current financial year. The draft national cloud computing policy, which will be submitted to the executive authority for approval. That's one of the targets. And also in terms of looking on the strategy for delivering the services through 5G as well as the Wi-Fi 6 to stimulate the digital economy. We are also looking on the policy to discontinue the GSM phones or the 2G phones, which we are going to be developing as well. And the last one on this outcome is the Electronic Communication Amendment Bill, which will be submitted to the cluster and cabinet for public consultation and approval. So we can go to the next one. In terms of outcome number two, which is the increased access to secure digital infrastructure and services. So the APP targets that we are looking into on this one is the implementation of the revised SA Connect model coordinated on the funded sites. There are sites that are funded on phase one. So we are looking on those ones as well, and we are looking on the moving to the second phase of the SA Connect. So also one of the things that we are looking on to is the rapid deployment of digital infrastructure, which will be coordinated. Also the implementation of the strategic national cybersecurity programs and services monitored. We are also looking onto the household migration and analog switch off broadcasting digital migration coordinated for households that were registered after 31 October 2021. We are also going to be developing the policy direction on the 5G deployment, implementation of the social obligations for the new spectrum license holders, which will be monitored as well, as we will know that these social obligations were part of the ITA that was released in terms of the spectrum auction. And the last one on this one is the second draft SA preliminary position on World Radio Congress 22, which will be developed. Can go to the next slide, Sven. And then outcome number three, which is digital transformed economy and society. So what we are looking into on that one is the implementation of identified international programs to support the digital economy initiatives that will be coordinated. We are also going to be looking on the study to communicate, study on cost to communicate, which will be conducted to inform the revision on data cost and recommendations stemming from that study, which will be implemented. We will also be continuing the implementation of the e-government strategy and roadmap, which focuses on the single portal for privatized government services. I think, Chair, I need to emphasize on this point here that as part of our mandate in terms of digitizing government, the e-government program becomes one of the critical programs that we're doing, and we have moved with speed from the last financial year to make sure that that portal is revamped and it can be used now with for the citizens. But we will be continuing the development of that portal for the additional services. And then also we are looking on the implementation of the Digital and Future Skills Program. Also, one of the critical programs that we're going to be looking on to this financial year is going to be the Green Paper on the Digital Government, which will lead to the Digital Government Act in the next 2 years or so. And the reason why we did look on this one is because we have seen that we are not moving fast enough in terms of digitizing the government. So if it becomes any legislation, then it becomes quite important to make sure that we can have this as a legislation. And then the next one is the digital and future skills training programs that are coordinated through local and international public and private partnerships. Also the establishment of the AI Institute coordinated, as well as the AI strategy developed. This is stemming from one of the outcomes of the PC4IR report, and it's one of the areas that we're going to be focusing heavily on this current financial year. And also the last one is going to be the Digital Economy Master Plan to be approved and implemented. You can go to the next slide, Joseph. Outcome number four, which is high performing and sustainable portfolio to enable the achievement of the respective mandates. So this is more, or some of these targets are inward looking as well from our department, which includes the digital transformation strategy implemented, which is we're going to be looking on the workflow management of the department. Also in terms of departmental and SOC GDYC responsiveness programs, monitored in line with the national targets. We are also going to be doing the implementation of the DCDT Integrated Action Plan in support of the National Strategic Plan on Gender-Based Violence, focusing on prevention, reporting, and economic power pillars. Also, we will be looking onto the District Digital Development Model, which is DDM, prioritized on the prioritized districts, which we're going to be implementing as well. Consolidated performance monitoring and reporting for the portfolio will be developed as well. So implementation of the recommendations from the analysis of the departmental and the public entities performance report, as well as the tabling of the APPs of the public entities in line with the MTSF and in line with which will be facilitated as well. Also, the last one there is the monitoring and evaluation of the performance management system for the ICASA councillors will be facilitated as well. I think those are the 36 priorities that we will be looking into for this next financial year. If we can just go through the financial performance, financial information for this current financial year. Next slide. So in terms of the MTF allocation, you will see that we have got 7.7 billion that has been allocated on the MTF, and 70% of the budget it goes to the transfers to the entities. And in terms of the COE, you will see that it's allocated ceiling not to be exceeded without the approval of Parliament. And also there has been a decline in the 2023-24 financial year and an increase in 2024-25 financial year. In terms of the goods and services, we have included the allocation of the SA Connect, which is the broadband rollout for the public institutions. And you would see on 2022-23, we have got 203 million that has been allocated to SA Connect. 23-24 is going to go to 204, and then 24-25 it's going to go to 212 million, which in total goes to 620 million in the medium term. And then if I can just go through in terms of the economic classification, you will see that most of our budget goes to the transfers at 1.9 billion, which is if I'm looking on the 2022 current financial year, which is 2022-23. And then the compensation of employees is 302 million. And then goods and services is 440 million. And then in terms of the payment of capital assets, 3.4 million. And then in terms of the total for the current financial year, we are sitting at 2.717 billion for this financial year. Next slide, Chair. So in terms of the transfers, you will see that for the medium term, so the transfers that we've got is 5.4 billion. And the transfers that we are doing in line with the approved treasury regulations. And if you can just delve a little bit on the transfers, you'll see that the biggest ticket items goes to ICASA, our regulator, at 769 million on the current financial year. And then also the other one is South African Post Office at 500 million this current financial year. And the third one, it deals the SABC in terms of the public mandate, which is 133.8 million. Next slide. I think that would be the last slide, if I'm not mistaken. Thank you very much, Chair. I'm going to hand over to the DM for any final remarks. Thank you very much, and the committee.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, DDG Mashulugu, for the presentation. Chair, this constitute our annual performance plan in summary that we wish to present to the committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DM. Colleagues, this is the APP of the department. Let's engage colleagues. Honorable Labuskagne, you'll be the first one, followed by Honorable Alnod.
I'm here, Chair.
And Honorable Nana My Chocolate.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nyambi. Good morning, everyone. I have a few questions to ask. First of all, I would want to say thank you for the presentation. I would like to know, you have four outcomes, that's just in general, and everyone in this committee knows that I do not attend this committee on a regular basis due to the fact that I'm in another committee that very often meet at the same time. But I must say, from the last previous year's presentation on the APPs and the strategy to today, there's a vast difference. But it's a very, my question is, in the four outcomes that you say this is the outcome, but the priorities has been listed. There's a lot of priorities. And I also picked up on a lot of policy changes or development, as well as I've seen at least three pieces of legislation. Now, you say these are the outcomes and the priorities for 22-23. I'm asking if this is very realistic. Is it realistic? Is it practical, possible to implement all these things? That's the first question. Then the second question, I would like to know on the cybersecurity programs and monitoring of that. Is that only for within your department or the entities? And how far is it exactly? Just a little bit more about that. Then the third question is the role and the function as well as the role of the function of your department into the district development model, and because that is focused on local government and the funds directed to that, and how does that align with the roles and functions of the Schedule 4 and 5 in the Constitution. And then the last question is the 500 million or more or less 500 million billion rand, I don't know whether it's a million or a billion, or the second biggest chunk of your budget that's going to SA post offices, and we know that the state that the post offices are in, what specific use what does the post office need, or what does the post office utilize this money for, and or is this a covered bailout to the post office? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Skaka. Honourable Arnold.
Thank you, Chairperson, and greetings to the members of Parliament, and then also to the officials that is present. Chairperson, let me first thank the department for presenting the 2022-2023 annual performance plan. Chairperson, can the department explain why there was in previous year the priorities in terms of the outcomes was reduced from 41 till this current year to 36. It was first reduced from 41 to 35, and now there's only for this year, only a one priority increased in the department's outcomes. So can the department please explain that? Then, Chairperson, in terms of the transfers to entities, this is a very big amount if you look at the 5.4 billion transfers to entities. But we all know that the entities that is currently under the department, there's a lot of risk factors which these entities are struggling with, and we can name a few of them in terms of the financial sustainability, governance challenges, and we're talking about their revenue targets, and we can go on, Chairperson. So how are the department going to ensure in terms of assistance and monitoring these entities so that they can so that they deliver on their services to communities? Then, Chairperson, can we get a response from the department? There is a decline in the 2023-2024 financial year, and then again an increase in the 2024-2025 financial year. Can the department please just respond in terms of the financial year in 2023-2024, where there is a decline, and how will it impact on the services? Thank you for now, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Arnold, Honourable Nana.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, everyone. Chairman, I would want to firstly make a comment with regards to the presentation by the department. It took roughly about 15 minutes. And I don't judge presentations by the amount of time spent delivering them. But it's just a comment. It took roughly about 15 minutes. I should mention that it was rather thin on detail. You know, Chairman, as much as I do, that in the NCOP, we do insist in wanting to see the impact that these plans will have in our provinces in terms of in terms of projects and targets for various provinces. But sadly, this presentation is rather quiet. Or as I said, it's pretty much thin. It's because people are used to doing things the old same way. From where I'm sitting, it doesn't look so different to a presentation that can actually be made to the National Assembly. Having said that, Chairman, there is a matter of SA Connect, who as a committee have raised on a number of occasions with the department. I would really want to know the status of SA Connect insofar as the pilot sites are concerned, with particular reference to OR Tambo, which is in my province, and it happens to be my constituency. I would really want to know how far is the implementation of SA Connect in that district, and also how ready is the department in implementing beneficiation for communities in that area, and that will include whether people have been trained for maintenance and repairing an event. Something goes wrong with connectivity. Secondly, Chairperson and Honourable Arnold has covered me on the targets, on the priorities. I wanted to raise that as well. But secondly, it's on digital migration. I've heard the minister, I suppose early this week or late last week, addressing the media on digital migration. And I hope I'm wrong, Chairman. I get a sense that the department is, and then please correct me if I'm wrong, DDG. I get a sense that the department is pretty much in haste to meet the target whilst leaving multitudes of people behind, with a risk of those people without connection to television once the country has been migrated in full. The third issue, and I know it's not related to your performance plans, but it's a matter that I really wanted to ask. In fact, I did ask it to your acting DG, I think it was Nkubela Jordan at the time. Because it pains my heart, Chairman, every time I drive past the post office in Grahamstown, every time I drive past the post office in Butterworth, Dowichwa, and in Alice, my hometown, as early as 6 o'clock, there are long queues of people waiting to withdraw their 350s. People are on top of one another. It's a total violation of those people's human rights. People queue as early as 6 o'clock. and they might actually go home without getting their 350s, having spent the entire day at the post office. There is absolutely no dignity for those people. It's reminiscent of the apartheid era. I would want to get a comment, particularly from the deputy minister in this regard. GCIS and the Department of Communications, to what extent does GCIS and all the entities that report to GCIS disrupt the fact that GCIS is not part of communications but resides in the presidency? Thank you very much, Chair. In the last question, Chairman, I have a follow-up question. And lastly, DDG Mashul, you have a very great name. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Nana. Your namesake is a great name. Honorable Mama, Honorable PB.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson Baba. I've got two questions. Thanks for the presentation from the department and greetings to all of you colleagues. The first one will be, I see in on your vision and mission and the mandate statements, that the emphasis is on transformation, and if it can, you can explain a little bit about how the auctioning of the spectrum will transform the telecommunication sector. And the second one, Chairperson, will be which targets or projects that you were unable to carry out as a result of budget adjustments, and also as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. And have you included those projects in the current APP? Thank you so much, Chairperson. Those were my two questions.
Thank you, Mama. Mama Modise.
Thank you very much, Papa. And let me greet my colleagues and Deputy Minister. Firstly, let me welcome the presentation from the department. I have two questions, Papa. My first one, can please the department explain what you refer in your slide number 6? As a social obligation for the new spectrum license holders, we all know that license holders will refer to be fined than complying with license obligation. I need a clarity on that one. My second question is, with the establishment of USASA, how are you going to ensure that South Africans, especially in underdeveloped areas, have access to ICT services that are affordable, since this was a USASA mandate? Thank you very much, Papa.
Thank you, Mama. Mama Modise, thank you. Now it's Mama Ngwenya.
Thanks very much, Chair, for giving me this opportunity. Honorable Chairperson, having studying and listening to the presentation as presented by the department, I would like to ask the following question. The department is midway through the medium term strategic framework. I want to know, how has the department contribute towards the achievement of priority 2 of government parties, and namely economic transformation and job creation? The second question, Chair, I want to check with the department, is planning to allocate about 5.4 billion rand to the entities. Is this allocation a value of money? And if yes, how these entities assisting the department to achieve its development objective? I thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable De Bruyne.
Well, thank you, Honorable Chair. Chair, I've been covered to a large extent by Honorable Donna as well as Labuschagne. But with regards to the allocations to the National Post Office, I would just like the department just to explain or try and motivate it, the large funds that are allocated to them. Because as we have seen in the last couple of years, the performance of the National Post Office, it's obvious that there will be no return on investment whatsoever. And it looks like it's going to be another cash cow. So if the department can just expand or just explain regarding the post office grant. Thank you.
Thank you. DM, you can lead the team from my part, just to add only one, the issue of your transfers, the foreign government and international organizations, if that can be explained, what is it all about? Otherwise, all the other questions have been covered. DM, you can lead, and Mr. Masholoko, in dealing with the questions.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think I will ask the DDGs to respond to some of the questions. We've got officials from the department, the DDGs and the CFO. So I would request them to respond to the questions. There's a couple of them that I've also noted, which I'm also going to come back to them to respond to those questions. Unfortunately, Chair, there are a couple of questions which I missed because of my connectivity problem. I missed some questions from Honorable Labuschagne. And I think I missed some few questions from Honorable Nana. But I hope the officials from the department manage to pick up those questions. Can we start with the DDG Masholoko?
So thanks DM, and thanks the members of the committee for the questions. DM, yes, I did pick up a couple of the questions, and I just want to respond to just one or two questions. And I think most of the questions, they also relate to the programs that are either on SA Connect or the Spectrum, with the DDG Ngobeni will take through those ones. And the other ones will go to the CFO in terms of the transfers as well as the entity oversight. But I just wanted to just answer just one question, one or two questions from Honorable Labuschagne in terms of the DDM. So what we are currently doing in terms of the DDM, we do work with the other departments in terms of understanding what is currently happening in that particular district. And also what we do There's a program that we started as well in terms of that we work with the municipalities, which we call a district digital enablement, whereby we look at the core of the municipalities, what they currently do and what are their current requirements. And then from there on, we work with our entities as well as the private sector in terms of saying that this particular area doesn't have network connectivity, then probably we're going to need to work with the MNOs in terms of providing that connectivity. And then some entities will find, some municipalities will find that it's probably more inward looking in terms of their broadband, in terms of that particular municipality, where we work with our entities, be it CETA and Broadband Infraco, as well as Femtech, to assist them. So that is the work that we're currently doing in terms of the DDM chair. But also I think the area of the BDM also, we are trying to factor that one into the work that we're currently doing in terms of the DDM. And I think, DM, let me hand over to probably, maybe let's start with Udirichi Ngobeni in terms of the SA Connect as well as the spectrum issues and DDM. And then if we can go from that one and then we go to the CFO as well in terms of the transfers and as well as any oversight. Thanks, Chair, and thanks to the members of the committee.
And thanks, DDG, and good morning to Chair and honorable members. I'll address questions on the cybersecurity raised by Honorable Skarsny with regard to the scope of our cybersecurity role. So our role emanates from the national policy framework on cybersecurity. We have a focus on awareness, and also coordinating the private sector, civil society, and citizens with regard to cybersecurity matters. So with regard to awareness, we make sure that people and citizens are aware about cybersecurity threats as they emerge. But we also coordinate the private sector, firstly to build capacity, ensuring that the sector are also organized to deal with cybersecurity threats. But we also share threat information one of the requirements of the cybersecurity policy framework was for this department to establish what we call a cybersecurity hub, which then becomes a central point where cybersecurity threat information is sent to, either with based on our collaboration with international partners, but also nationally with the different stakeholders. But we have other different role players. CETA, for example, is responsible for the security of government information under the, as directed by the State Security Agency. We've got the police in terms of cyber crime, and also the defense as well in terms of cyber defense. So in terms of the programs that we monitor, these are programs to ensure the awareness, but also to ensure that as cybersecurity threats emerges, because they emerge on a daily basis and they're different in terms of their complexity, we share that information to enable stakeholders to be able to prepare themselves and also to be able to attend to some of these threats, either to prevent them from happening. And some of the information that we share is technical information that we will liaise with the different cybersecurity response teams that have been organized and established in the different sectors. For example, in the banking sector, we work with the SABRIC, and also in the communication sector, we've got MoBridge. And these are organizations that put together sector players in the different sectors to be able to deal with cybersecurity issues as they emerge. So that's the scope of the work that we perform. We don't deal with the national cybersecurity issues, except that we are part of the Cybersecurity Response Committee under the GCPS cluster. We also contribute and coordinate with government as well in terms of sharing information, in terms of particularly of threat information as they emerge. There was also a question from Honorable Nana on the SA Connect. with regard to the status of the phase one in the Oar Tambo region. So firstly, with regard to the phase one, we have concluded the phase one program of Ethnic Connect, which covered 970 government facilities which are connected. And we continue to maintain that connectivity and ensure that it continues to function and provide services to those different facilities, which include schools, clinics, and other types of government facilities. In Oar Tambo, I think out of the 970, there are about 178 government facilities, which we do maintain connectivity for those facilities. However, because that's not all the facilities in the Oar Tambo, as part of the revised approach for the SA Connect, the phase two, which was adopted by cabinet in January, there will be an expansion of providing that connectivity through SITA, but also focusing on community connectivity through our entities, BBI and Centec. And that talks to the issue that you raised in terms of the beneficiation. With regard to the phase one, what we did, in most of the of the provinces, we used the SMMEs during the rollout of the infrastructure. And that also contributed, of course, to the SMME development and job creation. However, with the phase two, the intention is that through our entities, BBI and Centec, government will roll out the core and access network and bring it closer to these different communities throughout the country. And then it allows then the local ISPs, the SMMEs, you know, to leverage on that infrastructure to provide services to their local communities. Because one of the key challenges having access to the network that carries the traffic or information from the local area back to the bigger internet or a network society. So we are trying to address that challenge by rolling out a core network and also access network, and then allow the ISPs to leverage and provide services over that that network. That's the intention that we've got. And that will ensure that we also expand the provision of connectivity to remote and rural areas. And through that, the local SMEs, of course, then will participate in the economy, and they'll be able to participate in ensuring that they've got they are able to even expand their own those networks to provide services, and they'll be able then to do the maintenance, and that can also, then as their businesses grow, can contribute to job creation as well. And then on the issue of the digital migration, let me comment, Honorable Nana, that the department seems to be in a haste to meet the target. If you recall, Honorable Nana, the minister, I think around October, announced that, people must register, those who have not registered, to receive support by government, indigenous households, with regard to set-top boxes. So government has been working very hard to finalize the installation of set-top boxes in those households that have registered. We've actually adopted an accelerated mode of the distribution of the set-top boxes from the SAPO warehouses to the household, and also accelerating the installation rate. And that, I think we've reached about 50% of the set-top boxes have been distributed to the 500,000 who had registered by the end of October. So we are working very hard, and also bearing in mind the deadline that has been set now with the deferment of the 31st of March date by the courts to 30 June. But also the courts are cognizant that even at the end of June, as the switch off happens, there may be people who have reached that after the 31st of October, and government will strive to also conclude that by end of September. That's why you will see on the APP that the digital migration program talks to ensuring that everyone then is taken along by the time the digital migration program is concluded. although the switch off me will happen by end of June. Then was a question by Honorable Lisa on the obligations that have been imposed on licensees. So, and the comment that often the licensee would prefer to pay than meet the obligations. The department has been very proactive, working in collaboration with ITAS and of course the sector as well, in ensuring that those obligations are part of the invitation to apply for licensing of spectrum. So when the licensees who participated and eventually obtained spectrum, they were aware of these obligations because they were included in the ITA. But what the department has also done is been proactively working with ICASA also on the contextualization of these obligations and also engaging with the beneficiary department. But the department, hence it is included in the APP, the need to monitor the implementation of these obligations, not to wait until after the third year to check whether the obligations have been met. So there will be a regular monitoring by the department of whether the licensees are meeting these obligations. And then we're working on developing a monitoring framework that will assist us. Of course, we're working through ICASA as a regulator in the sector. So that will also help us to pick up issues if there are any as the licenses roll out and implement these obligations. I'm not sure if there's anyone taking this information advice. Thank you.
Thanks, DM, you can come too.
No, I wanted to check who's supposed to be next. Is it the CFO?
Yes, it's the CFO and the entity oversight, DM.
Okay. Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, DM, and the colleagues. Chair, there were two questions. I will start with the a question where the Honorable Member asked why in the allocation there is a decline in the 2023-24, and then there's also an increase in the outer year. Chair, the decline that we see there, it's coming from the compensation of employees. Normally how we do the forecast, there is a tool that is utilized by National Treasury that we populate as a department. And because in the previous years, positions became vacant and the posts were not filled because the organizational structure was not finalized. Can you hear me, Chair?
Yes, we can hear you.
All right, thank you. So because of those, so the posts that have been filled up to so far, they are mainly on a contract basis. So, however, once the organizational structure, because we're anticipating that it will be finalized during the course of this financial year, then if there is a shortfall then we will engage National Treasury in terms of the funds allocation. But looking previously in terms of benchmarking, the department was allocated more or less around the 300 million, and we were able to utilize those funds fully. Chair. Then, Chair, I'll come to the question on the transfer to entities on the 5.4 billion over the MTF. Chair, in the main, these allocations, they are appropriated by National Treasury to the entities and mainly looking at benchmarking from the previous years. And in the main, we see that ICASA and SAPO, they are getting the bulk of the money. And in the main, those funds, they are for their own operations. And although we know that SAPO is still engaging a National Treasury in terms of their financial crisis, Chair. In the main, it's that. And then in terms of the monitoring on the utilization of these funds, Chair, before we could effect any transfer to the entity, there are quarterly reports that we normally request from the entities and the SOC oversight branch. Therefore, they will peruse those documents and check whether the funds they have been used in a manner that it was allocated. And then that's when finance can effect the payment for the next quarter in terms of the transfer. So, Chair, I think then SOE oversight, they can also maybe expand in terms of them further monitoring that they do and also how these assist the department in terms of the service delivery. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Chair, can I come in? I'm from Entity Oversight. I'm from the Entity Oversight. I just wanted to touch on some of the responses that the CFO has referred them. I'll first start with SAPO. There was a question that was asked about what the money is intended for. This is not a bailout. The funds that are allocated to SAPO currently has to do more with the universal service obligation that SAPO has. In terms of the Postal Services Act and the SAPO Act, SAPO has a universal mandate to have operations across the country, irrespective, especially even in rural areas and all of that. So within the branches that SAPO has, so there are those branches that fall within what you call the universal service mandate, which have been identified. Basically, those offices would never be profitable at all. The main purpose is to make sure that the people do get services irrespective. So on that basis, then SAPO would be subsidized just to make sure that the offices are operational. So it's not to actually fund SAPO as a whole. The funds are actually very limited in terms of what has been allocated. Hence, it's just a subsidy to meet SAPO halfway. And there was a question about the SRD payments. On the SRD payments, yes, there have been challenges in terms of SAPO rendering the services. If we would recall, SAPO started rolling out the SRD payment in May 2020. And then how the whole program started, it started as a disaster relief fund, where initially it was that SAPO were to administer the fund on a three-month basis. So on that basis, it would not have been possible for SAPO to enter into any long-term contracts and all of that, whatever that is required in terms of managing the funds. But it was that as it was introduced, then SAPO had to hit the ground running in terms of rendering this. So obviously, the need is very more in terms of the economic dynamics, where there are a lot of people that are needy requiring the funds. So what then happened in the process of SAPO administering the funds, there were various challenges that were experienced The long queues is one of those where there were long queues in some of the post offices. So what the post office has done, also working with SAPO in terms of addressing some of those challenges, because there were a number of challenges that were identified, was to find ways as to how they can mitigate against some of the challenges. So one of the things that were introduced was to say, how can they effectively manage the queues? Where they even identified, like to say, maybe instead of people just going to the post offices to go and get the grants, there need to be a system where people get paid based on their ID numbers, where people with certain numbers were given certain dates to say you come on the stage. But because of the need, some of the people, even though it is not it's not their day of being paid, people will still flock to the post offices, which actually talks to the economic conditions that we are dealing with. And then when the cash is packaged, obviously it will be packaged based on whatever the need of the particular post office would have been. So in instances where there have been a lot of people coming for cash and then cash would become depleted, for example. So the post office has been working with SASSA just to make sure that they can have some tracking of some sort. And also this introduction of the SMSs was one of the things that were identified. So continuously there is work that SAPO would be working with, even with the CIT companies to try and manage this. And then what would happen, for example, in terms of the overcrowding is that the beneficiary, the system will trigger an ID number, like the last three digits of the people that need to go. And then only when the SMS is received and the person is supposed to go there. But like I indicated, because of the needs, it is a people find it difficult to wait for that. So in terms of there was another question that related to USASA, where the question was if USASA is to be dissolved, how would we still make sure that people in the underdeveloped areas have affordable services? So the dissolution of USASA is not to dissolve the mandate. If we would recall, USASA was established back in 2005 in terms of the ECA Act. And then there's been other developments. So the scope was basically based on the mandate, which would have been prescribed by the ECA. And then in 2016, the white paper, the IPT white paper, identified some gaps in terms of the fund, and then it recommended ways by which they can be improved. So the dissolution is not to do away with the mandate, but is to say how can we restructure, rationalize, and find efficient enhancements within our SOEs in terms of making sure that the funds are optimally utilized, and also deal with some of the limitations from what the scope was in the ECA, and then aligning it with the National Integrated ICT White Paper. If there's anything, the realignment or the restructuring of the institutional framework under which the funds need to be manage is basically to make sure that it's beneficial still for people that are needy, but also to make sure how we the scope is broadened, that is not narrowed to the original mandate as in the ECA. So if there's anything, the people are still protected, just to say how do we find a better institutional framework to administer the funds, and also taking into account the current landscape that we are in. For example, we're talking about digital services and all of those things. So that is not just traditionally to what FASA was doing. Thanks. I think those were the three. And then there was also a question asked about how do we monitor the SOEs. In terms of the monitoring of the SOEs, obviously the SOEs are developed to render the service as prescribed by different mandates that they are operating under. So we have different tools that we work on. One of the things that one of the tools we have, obviously most of these entities would have, for example, the governance structures that the department would put in place, like the establishment of the ports and all of those. And then one of the things that we do is that they are also required to develop your strategic corporate plans, which also need to align to broader priorities. And then we would then have to monitor them in terms of how they are implementing the corporate plans. And then over and above that, we are aware that the department is not at the entities on a day-to-day basis, but we've got the board and then we've got the executives. So what we would have is the shareholder compact, which is kind of like an agreement, a monitoring tool in terms of what the entity is committing and what are the agreement with the shareholder. So that help in terms of managing the relationship. And we also have where they are, where we monitor the performance in terms of the quarterly performance reports that they would also submit to us, and then where we would monitor them against the commitments made in the corporate plan. And just a general oversight of the entities. Even the funding that the CFO was referring to, obviously, if there has to be any allocation of funding, it would have to be have its intended purpose. And then on that basis, that's the framework that the CFO was talking about, that the allocation will be done. Like in the case of SAPO, they are asked the fund is purely for the universal purpose. And then even with the other entities in the presentation, it doesn't align with that, what the fund is. So it's not a blanket funding. In the case where there are broader challenges, for example, if we look at the post office currently, there are major challenges in terms of the entities, financial challenges that they are currently experiencing and all of that. So that is being dealt with broadly with SAPO would develop a turnaround plan. Currently, we have what we call the Post Office of Tomorrow, which SAPO has developed. And the intention there is to looking at the broader challenges of SAPO to say, how can SAPO realign itself in terms of making sure that it is sustainable in the medium to long term, and then identifying priorities where the focus areas need to be, and also mindful of the broader mandate that SAPO has, and also the broad reach that they have. So that is what is intended, to make sure that if there's any intervention is based on the plan, and on the basis of that plan, that's when that's what the CFO was referring to, that we are engaging the National Treasury to say that now that we have a plan, how do we make sure that we support the entity in terms of making sure that the plan is funded? Thank you. I hope I've covered all the questions. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, maybe, Chair, let's say. I don't know if there's anyone in the department who wants to respond to some of the questions which have not been responded to. Okay. Did you Ngobeni?
There was a question by the chair, I think the last question on the foreign government transfers and what does it mean? If I can attempt, and particularly because of the work that the department does, it's basically cross borders, and it requires collaboration across various countries, whether it's the our close neighbors or even the region and even internationally. And as a result, the department is a member of various international bodies, you know, including the International Telecommunications Union, which coordinates communication issues across the world. And some of the issues that we deal with the ITU, the International Telecommunications Union, include issues of just essential that there is compatibility in terms of communication between the different communication systems that are developed across the world, and to ensure economies of scale. The issues of spectrum, because they cross borders, and how do you manage interference that's generated from communications. So there are frameworks that are developed internationally, and almost all the main countries in the world are members of these bodies, which then facilitates either the review of new technologies, particularly those that require standardization and also that require access to spectrum, to ensure that eventually these systems are able to communicate with each other. So the department contributes membership fees to this. And recently we became a member of what's called FIRST, that's the Forum of Incident Response Teams. That's part of our cybersecurity role, which is one of the key institutions that enables sharing of cybersecurity threat information across the globe so that we're able to mitigate some of this before they even hit our shores, and also learn from other countries how they're dealing with some of this. So we pay memberships to that, and I think that's what that transfer to foreign government also talks to. There was also an issue around the issue of spectrum licensing and its contribution to transformation, and particularly the auction. Of course, the auction in the main, you know, those benefit are those who have access to funding. And initially the department was looking at the issue of the wireless open access, but looking at the challenges, and the department now is reviewing that approach, looking at what's the best way to enable participation by small operators in the sector, because the sector is capital intensive in terms of one is required to invest a lot of infrastructure before they can even make the first call. So in ensuring sustainability. So, and the department is working on a revised policy for spectrum, which also coupled with the 5G policy direction, to look at how we can address some of these transformation requirements as spectrum is licensed. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you, DGG Gobeni. Maybe let me just attempt to respond to the questions which remain unanswered. I think on the first point, I think that's where I would like to start. The point that has been raised by Honorable Nana, and I think it's a concern from his part that our presentation took only 15 minutes and it was very thin on detail. You know, there is always a predicament when we prepare. Sometimes you give too much detail, and mostly you members would indicate that the issues must be summarized. You give too few detail, you summarize, and the members would want more detail. I think that is a situation that we sometimes get to be confronted with. This presentation is the same that was presented yesterday at the Portfolio Committee on Communications. There were other presentations as well of the entities and so forth. So it's the same. We have not really changed anything because the intention is just to summarize the issues. The detailed plan has been tabled, and I think it has been made available to the members. So in as much as we might have misunderstood the expectation, Honorable Nana, we apologize. I think next time we will give you all the details which are mostly contained in the actual plan. I think some of the questions of Honorable Labus Gartner has been responded to, except the question about SAPO, which has also been raised by Honorable De Bray. Maybe just to put us into proper context with regards to SAPO. So the data that is emerging from the entity suggests that the entity started to experience decline as late as 2015. In fact, since 2016, the entity has been on a downward slope throughout because of the changes, technological changes that are taking place in the market in which the letter post was constituting the bulk of its market, and over time when technology gets to be introduced, the post office was not able to adapt as quickly as the technology interrupted its operation. So that is one of the factors which has led to where we are now. But there were many other factors. I think colleagues might remember the strike, the crippling strike in the post office. And as a result of that strike, the personnel budget of the entity had to be increased, where the majority of those people who were used to be employed by the labor brokers then had to be absorbed by the post office. to an extent that if you look at the financials of the post office currently, the bulk of the expenditure goes to salaries. It is over 60% that gets to be allocated to salaries, which is an unattainable situation. So there are a couple of factors which has been impacting on the viability of the post office. There was a bailout, I think, in 2019. But we have since discovered that that bailout was not utilized for the purpose for which it was intended. So as a result, it had very little impact in turning around the entity up to where we are now. Where we are, the reality of the situation is that the post office is experiencing very serious liquidity challenges. And so we have been in discussions with the National Treasury to try and see how that intervention can come from National Treasury to bring more resources in order to recapitalize the post office. But the situation as it is now, it's quite dire. The post office require financial injection, without which its going concern status becomes into question. So we don't think it will operate without any form of intervention. The financials are there. We can share with the committee about the situation where the post office finds itself. So we are engaging in a conversation with Treasury to see if Treasury can come and assist in the same manner that it did with the SABC about 2-3 years ago, we are also engaged in similar discussion. So the money that appears there, about 500 million, is not intended for this, which I'm explaining, that we are talking to Treasury to come and bail out the entity. Because I can tell you, without any bailout, we're going to experience serious problems. The future of about 15,000 employees is on the line. The post office is just too important for us to let it collapse. So we're doing everything in our power to make sure that we salvage this important entity. So I think Renee has already explained that the over 500 million that is appearing on the budget is for the universal service obligations. So there are certain obligations that are imposed on the post office by legislation to render services in areas where it's not profitable. So the intention is that these services are important basic services that are rendered to our community, mostly in the far rural areas, and there is no income that is derived from that. And so this amount, this allocation compensate for those obligations. But the post office argues that it is not sufficient, this amount that has been allocated. So when they did the calculation of how much it costs to carry these universal service obligations, it's far more than what is allocated by Treasury. So that is just to clarify that that amount does not. And the question whether do we derive any value, is there any return on investment on the money? Yes, there is, Honorable Dubrow. Already explained this obligation, the universal services obligation, that this money goes towards this servicing these obligations. And you know that the post office has got quite an expansive footprint. Almost in every area you find the post office, although some of them are now closing because it is finding itself in a very difficult situation. But yeah, it does have that footprint, which can be used for other services of government. So those are the discussions. And now Renee has explained that we have requested the post office to develop a turnaround plan, which they have done. They have submitted to us. It has been approved by the minister. It has been shared with cabinet as well. And so for now, the preoccupation is to implement that turnaround strategy. It talks to a number of issues, which I don't want to bore the committee unless if you do request that, we must come and brief you about the details of the strategy. But we are confident that this turnaround plan will work. If we do get the necessary capital injection, we can be able to salvage the South African Post Office. Let me move to the next question. Honorable Nana, you're asking a question about SA Connect, and I think you're making specific reference to OR Tambo. I think DDG and Ngobeni attempted to respond to that, but I suspect that the project that you are referring to might be a project that is being implemented by USASA. It's a broadband rollout. USASA has identified two areas. One is in the Northern Cape, and the other area is in the Eastern Cape in the region of OR Tambo. So those projects are still continuing. Now, the different model of rolling out the SA Connect, maybe before I get to the model, I think what has happened with the SA Connect, just to buttress the point that was made by DPG Govind, the there were two phases which were anticipated of the SA Connect. So the first phase was funded by the fiscus, and it involved the connection of those households that Eugene Kobelo was talking about. But this was not just the first phase, it was almost like a pilot, because the need to roll out broadband in the country is quite huge and it requires a lot of resources. So those public facilities were identified, and the CETA, BBI, I don't know, to some limited extent, Centec as well, identified as SOEs which were supposed to drive this process, for which they did. They managed to implement, to roll out the connectivity, and that connectivity, we are still maintaining that connectivity to schools, to other public facilities. Now, the second phase, Treasury requested that there must be a feasibility study to be conducted. And so that feasibility study was conducted. However, when they presented the report, the cost of the feasibility study was quite high. And so the minister made a different determination that the state may not be able to afford the cost as presented by the feasibility study. And therefore, that necessitated a review of the phase two of the SA Connect, which was done, submitted to Cabinet. Cabinet has approved. The current discussions with Treasury is to come up with the financials and do the necessary submissions so that the allocation can be made for the phase two. But there is allocation that has been made. I think if you go to the financials, you'll see that for this financial year, I think it's just over 200 million. And there is other allocation in the outer year. So we are implementing the SA Connect phase two. Although for now, there's still an issue about the full availability of the funding that is required. That discussion is taking place with National Treasury. So what is happening as a result of the disestablishment of USASA? All the projects that USASA was funding, which this broadband rollout in the Northern Cape and in Boas Tambo, has now, that responsibility has now been given to BBI. So BBI is working on that. So that project is not going to be abandoned. BBI will conclude that project going forward. I hope I've been able to clarify even further on the SA Connect. There is a steering committee that is chaired by the minister that is meeting bi-weekly to look at the implementation of this program. And then there was also a question raised about the broadcasting digital migration, which I think DDG Ngobeni tried to respond to it. But I just want to make one point. And the point is that we are being accused of fast-tracking this process of migrating the country from analog to digital, from analog to digital. We are being accused that we are rushing this process. And our response has always been very simple. South Africa was supposed to migrate in 2015. That was the deadline that was agreed to with the ITU. And at one particular point, the country was making very good progress. And for a whole host of other reasons, things started to slow down. Up to where we are now. The other countries have migrated. And we always make a point that some of the countries that have migrated have got lesser resources than ourselves. But they did manage to migrate. There is no analog distribution signal distribution in those countries is only digital. And we have been left behind. And so that's why the president last year in the State of the Nation address pronounced the deadline of March this year, that by March 2022, all the households will have migrated from analog to digital. And so we've been working on that deadline. Of course, there was litigation by e-media. They went to court, and the court has pronounced largely in our favor. And what the court has done is to simply revise our targets from March to June. But largely, the court has agreed with us that this is a national priority project. We have to migrate. Already, there is about 5 provinces that have completely switched off analog distribution in those provinces. We are left with about 4. And we are working around the clock to make sure that we do meet the deadline. But this program has always been underpinned by the need to make sure that no one must be left behind. And this is a message that we've always been communicating, that if you own a TV set that still receives analog signal distribution, you must approach the post office, apply, and if you do qualify, you'll be allocated with a set-top box. Centec will come and install at your place at no cost, and then you'll be receiving television. You'll be receiving your digital television. So that's the message that we have been communicating, but unfortunately, the response has not been that overwhelming. Sometimes our people wait until the signal is lost, and then they go and apply, and they are accommodated at all the post offices. So no one is going to be left behind, Honorable Nana. We can guarantee you that. Those who have already applied, they've been connected, and those who are applying, they will be on a queue to be allocated the set-top boxes. I think we've managed to respond to most of the questions. The disestablishment of USASA, we can assure Honorable Mubise that the functions, the mandate that this entity has been performing will continue to be performed. The idea is that as we disestablish, the employees will come back to the department. The department will continue with the mandate of providing the service that has been provided by USASA. I think on the social obligations, DDG Ngobeni has responded to that. But maybe just to add to say the idea for which now the details have been worked on is that those who received allocation of spectrum through this auctioning process, the licensees as we call them, they will be given certain obligation to connect the public facilities. And the numbers have been shared with them. They are quite comfortable with that. So as part of SA Connect Phase 2, these telcos will then be responsible to connect most of those public areas, the police stations, the schools. We are currently in the process of getting the final list from the Department of Education of all the schools that has to be connected on the Phase 2 through the social obligations. But I think generally some of the questions have been have been responded to, Chair. My apologies, I took a bit of time because I thought Let's just share with you the details of the issues we are dealing with that you've raised questions around. I think this therefore concludes our responses, Honorable Chair, and over to you. I'm done, Chair. Or is there a problem with my connectivity?
No, he's from Mpumalanga. Okay. So the chairman might be having connectivity issues.
All right. On our side, okay. Chair, we are done.
Are you still continuing, DM?
No, I was saying on our side, the Honorable Mudisha, we are done. Back to you.
No, thank you very much. While we are still waiting for the chair, members, anyone who would like to do follow-up question?
Yes, yes.
Yes,
chair. Yes. Yes, Honorable Labuskakni and Honorable Nana.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much for the answers. I would like to request a presentation to the Select Committee on the turnaround strategy, and then I just want to make a comment, or in this comment raise some issues or questions on that. I totally do understand that the post office is a very important and integral part of the South African history, specifically to provide in the needs of rural areas and very far off communities for certain services, and that the act is regulating that. But it's also apparent that there are a lot of problems. Most of them are financial problems in how the system is being, running, and are struggling at the moment. Now, this is not the only state-owned enterprise that is struggling at the moment in South Africa. And each of them has different reasons, and many of that has to do with the fact that sometimes we don't keep up with the changes in our communities. Now, two things that I want to say is I would like to know, instead of a turnaround strategy, has this department ever thought about a total change of thinking out of the box, of saying, yes, to ensure that certain services are rendered to the rural areas, and specifically, it's obvious that in a lot of these rural areas, a lot of our vulnerable people who are receiving grants through the system are going to, are at the end of receiving not so good services. So in the end, people working for the post office are frustrated and unsure of their future, and they have to deal with the most vulnerable people who have to sit in queues and waiting, and it's actually most of the times not the fault of any of these two groups. So is there rather than a turnaround strategy, all the turnaround strategies that I've seen in my life is first of all to get more money out of National Treasury. So that means to get more money out of the equitable share and of the taxes that's been paid by taxpayers. It can't go on like that. So my request would be, does the department have an idea of looking at a total new model of post office services? And say, for instance, just an idea, that in certain areas we need this amount of
and this kind of post offices, because this kind of services needs to be rendered and can only be rendered by the post office. And or we need this kind of post office in rural areas where certain things can be combined because we have a building, but we can combine certain services. And in certain urban areas, we don't need post offices at all because A, B, C, and D. And the buildings can be reutilized for this and look into a total new way of making sure that we don't lose the infrastructure of post offices, and also make sure that the services that's supposed to be rendered by post offices in more rural areas are still being done there. Because, you know, in your department, it's amazing that we struggle with this, because you're also the department for digital, services and preparing for the fifth industrial revolution, and we're still struggling to get post offices running. That's the one thing, Chair. And the second thing is, yes, I've listened and I accept the feedback from the monitoring of SOEs. But somewhere in the system, something is wrong. Either on the criteria that SOEs has to monitor, has to give feedback, and I understand that the people monitoring that are not the culprits. Either these entities are lying in those reports, because in the 8 years that I am in the NCOP, this is the same story that every monitoring body is telling, and they say there are these reports and the people have to give us the information, and based on the information we give them the money. Now this is an ongoing thing every year, but every year the same entities are more and more and more into trouble. So maybe the monitoring departments or the people responsible for monitoring have to also have a workshop and sit down with National Treasury and look at the criteria that you set to make sure that the next batch of money is dispensed to the same system, who are at that stage most of the time a broken system, because you have the track record of asking more and more money every year or not being able to spend that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thanks, Memo Dise, for assisting this thing of load shedding. Honorable Nana, you said something about a follow-up after they've responded. I can allow you on that one question.
Thanks, Chairman. I'm not sure if I missed it, but I made a comment about the situation in our post offices and the manner in which
they've covered that one.
Yeah, I may have missed it. My connectivity is also a problem. I'm sorry.
Okay, and no, they've covered that one.
The follow up was on GCIS being located in the presidency. How does that disrupt the operations of the Department of Communications?
Thank you. DM, before you can comment, there are issues that especially those that have been touched by Honorable Labuskar, at some stage, we're going to have ample time to engage the relevant entity as a shareholder, but it doesn't take away a comment that you might have as you are the relevant shareholder. But you can do that, being mindful that at some stage, we're going to have that opportunity to address some of the critical issues that has been raised by Honorable Labuskar. I'll allow you, DM, and your team to deal with the few follow-up questions.
Chairperson?
Yes?
Member Arnold's here.
Arnold?
There was no response in terms of the explanation about the priorities that is now was 41, 35, and now 36. I just want to check, is this going to be a norm in terms of the priorities? Thanks.
Thank you. DM?
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Maybe let's... you're right, Honorable Arnold. Our apologies. I think we missed that one on the reduction of priorities. From the department, is there anyone who can respond to this one? Didi Chimanzin?
Thank you very much, Chairperson and DM and the committee members. I'm checking on the one of the targets moving in terms of the numbers. I will allow Mr. Maleka or Mr. Libago to talk to that, but I will talk to the issue of the location of GCIS. Initially, GCIS was, there was this department, we had telecommunications and postal services, and then we had Department of Communications, which was separate, and GCIS was part of that, and postal was different. But when the DPSA, through the presidency, did the macro organization of the structure, they then separated to say, because GCIS is just responsible for communicating government programs and is responsible for all departments in terms of communication. They said the strategic location of that should be at the presidency. And we were then left separate with your Brand SA and others. They all then belong to the presidency. It does not necessarily disrupt us because in our department, we specifically focus on the issues of your digital technologies and communication, but we also use GCIS in terms of communication, in terms of our programs, because that's how it came out with that particular committee that dealt with it. But it was dealt with by DPSA, your DPME, and when they were dealing with the macro organization of government to say this is how departments are going to be structured. In terms of the, there was also a question of is it realistic to implement all these targets of ours? I'm sorry if that was touched on, but also to emphasize that most of the targets that are here, some of them do not necessarily need finances for them to be implemented. And we also through SPM, which is our strategic planning unit, they went through all the branches to make sure that all the targets that are put in there are targets that are going to be met. So the principle has always been that there is no target that you're going to put in the APP if the resources to service that particular target are not there. So that has been taken care of. May I then request Mr. Maleka or Mr. Libago to touch on the issue of the number of targets moving from 46 to 35. And thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, dear.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, honorable members. I think in terms of the targets, they are not, static. You know, they change, depending on the changes, for example, in the medium-term strategic framework that has been revised from the DPME. And the other thing is that, when we are developing this, we look at the MTSS document that has been revised. We also touch base with the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation and National Treasury so that, we are covered in terms of the priorities that we are supposed to do in line with the current mandate that we are currently undertaking. The other thing is that once we engaged with all relevant stakeholders, that is where we streamline the APP targets, and then we find that on the APP there will be some duplicates that we have to do or to undertake them on the business plan. So this document, you find that we might be having 36 And then some of them are in the business plan that the department is also undertaking. But most of the time we find there were duplicate kind of APP that has to be streamlined and changed and to be done, you know, at another lower level, you know, which is a business plan, but not saying they are not important. They are very important, but, you know, we couldn't kind of do them at the same time. But in the main, I just want to emphasize that, you know, whenever these targets are being, you know, prioritized, we look at the mandate one, the budget, the MPSF, the Department of Planning, Monitoring, Evaluation, the AG as well. We also touch base with them and the Health Treasury and see that these targets are having a huge impact. That is what the DM always emphasizes and the minister to say, let's look at the targets that are having huge impact, but not undermining the other work that we are also doing, that we will also do at the business plan level. So I will pause there, Chairperson, and the Stevens can also add. Thanks.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think maybe to be precise and just to add on what Mr. Libagu have said, in the previous financial year, when we amended the APP, we previously had you know, three targets which were sitting under the our program five, which was dealing with the issues of the broadband. One was the sourcing of the phase two funding, and the other one was for funding for household connectivity program. And the third one was regarding the project management office for the SA Connect phase two to be established. So what happened when we amended the APP was basically we clubbed them into one target, which was dealing with the SA Connect model. So because everything that it will be done under the three targets will be happening under the SA Connect model. And there was also two targets that we had on the BDM. The one was the issue of the subsidized digital television installation, which was done in terms of the four provinces that we mentioned previously, and the distribution of the you know, the 3.2 million vouchers. So what happened when we revised? Then we just came only with one target, which was focusing on the switch off of SABC analog television transmitters across all the provinces. So that because if you look at the way from those five targets only we reduced to two. So I think that was one of the reasons we are sitting at the 36. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. Maybe let me just deal quickly with the other questions, follow-up questions. Honorable Labus Krachner, we are ready and quite willing to share the details of the turnaround strategy of the post office. We have done that with the portfolio committee. Unfortunately, because of some of the information which is quite sensitive, we will request that it be handled in a particular way so that we can protect that information. But we are willing to pause and present the turnaround strategy of SAPO, the SAPO of tomorrow. But I also hear you when you say most of the turnaround strategies are just there to get money from Treasury. They are not really turnaround strategy. I would say that, Chair, I think it's a bit unfair to criticize a document that we have not seen, to generalize and to say, no, that document is the same as the other document, but you have not received the presentation of that document. I think let's say, Honorable Member, wait and receive the details of the strategy, and then the member can then come to a determination whether there is nothing
substantive about that strategy. It's the same as the other ones. But to make a general comment like that, I think it's not fair. And I think it's also very, very unscientific, because you must base your arguments on the facts and on the evidence. So when you make a general statement, it does not, it doesn't help really. So we'll say that let's come and do a presentation. And if there is a critique of the document, I think let's engage with the criticism by then. So that is what I will say. But I also hear the honorable member mentioning a critique on the SOEs that they are failing. I think, you know, I will say, Chair, our approach to the question of the state-owned enterprises or the public companies that are owned by the state that are performing public functions, some of them both public and private functions. For us, it's a question of how we conceptualize the developmental state, because the developmental state, in our view, must have features, must have an ability to also play in the areas where there is market failure. Sometimes it's not even about market failures, but there is a deliberate intention to render services through companies that are publicly owned. And so that is our ideological conception of the concept of a developmental state. So the SOEs will remain part of the features of our approach to rolling out services. But you must also understand that there must be efficiencies, there must be professionalism, there must be value for money, there must be run properly and accordingly. And this is the work that the Department of Public and DPE is busy working on in terms of rationalizing some of the SOEs and so forth. But the SOEs, some of them will remain as part of government. And I think, for instance, we don't subscribe to a leaner and thinner government, as opposed to others who may have a different view. But I guess that those are the debates for another day. There was an issue which we did not respond to on on the 5.4 billion, which is about 70% allocation to the entities. I think we're making a point earlier on that 70% of the allocation of the department goes to the entities. And this is in line with the different mandates of the entities. Because if you look at how the department is structured, we utilize the agencies to implement the mandate of the department. Oh, okay. I got to be a bit disrupted here. Electricity has that same back, but let me proceed. So if you look at the structure, we more deal with policy as a department, and we have got entities that are implementing on our behalf. And that's why you see the allocation is like that, where you have almost about 70% of the allocation that goes to the different entities, of course, according to their mandate. ICASA is the regulator, it has to continue to exist.
SABC is a public broadcaster. It must continue to exist and perform that mandate. And all other entities, you've got CETA, you've got NEMISA, you've got CENTEC, and all of the other entities, they're providing different mandates. And they largely receive their funding from the state. So thank you very much, Chair. I think that...
Thank you, DM. Let me take this opportunity to allow you, DM, to do your parting shots.
Okay, Chair. I think maybe I shouldn't say much. I guess I see there's contestation around some of the issues. I guess we may not agree because we are coming from different ideological persuasions. So we may not agree with some of the members about the questions they are raising, but I guess this platform of Parliament provides that opportunity for different ideas to be expressed, and so we welcome that. But Chair, thank you very much for having us. That was the annual performance plan that we had prepared. Once more, we didn't get the expectation that you wanted much more details than what we provided, but the details are available in the actual document, Chair. We are available at any time to engage with this select committee of Parliament. And we welcome the suggestions, some of the constructive suggestions that came. We welcome them, we will incorporate them as part of our work. Thank you, Chair, for that opportunity.
Thank you, DM Mapulane, and the team you brought to do the presentation today. Let me also once again thank you and your team, and indicate that, of course, as members have raised, sometimes the style, I personally prefer a shorter one so that we enjoy the engagement like the one of today. And well, others will have a different view, but when a presentation is short, to me, it's giving us as members of Parliament ample time to be able to engage as we've done today. And I find that to be of an advantage to us as members, unlike where you will have a presentation until it's time up, and then we don't have ample time and once again create problems. But once again, of course, we'll have some other engagement. Now it's for me to thank you and your team and my colleagues, and allow you and your team only to leave this platform. It's only members and the staff of Parliament that will remain so that we can deal with the minutes. Thank you, DM and your team. You can just leave the platform, and then it's only members that will remain. Thank you, DM and your team.
All right, thank you, Chair, and thank you to all the members.
Colleagues, Amanda has assisted us. We do have the minutes. Let's deal with them.
Thank you very much. We received the minutes on time and we have read the minutes.
Chairperson?
So by so saying...
Chairperson, before we adopt the minutes?
Yes?
If you can recall in our meeting, you can look at the last page of the minutes. It says there are resolutions. The department must submit a written report with regard to the 3.2 million vouchers. There is a sentence that was left out also there that must include the 970 broadband sites also.
they must submit a report on that also. That was what we have requested in the previous meeting. I don't know if you can recall that. So that must be also added on the minutes.
Memo Dise.
With those amendments that Honorable Arnold has spoke about, I move for the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you. Any seconder?
BB seconds, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mama. The minute has been adopted. Allow me, colleagues, to take this opportunity to thank you for availing yourself. I know that we go through some challenges, load shedding, connectivity, and moving from one meeting to another. But be that as it may, we are always available to make sure that the committee is able to do its work. Without much ado, allow me to officially declare this meeting officially closed. Thank you.
Thank you, Baba.
Recording.
Thank you, Baba.
Thank you, Baba.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Hot chocolate.
Cheers, my friend. Cheers, man. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.